It's the Deseret News Rise and Shout podcast, episode 340, and BYU beat Wisconsin. Let me say that again, BYU beat Wisconsin. Matt and I reflect on one of the biggest wins in BYU history. Just how did the Cougars pull it off on Saturday against the Badgers? And what does this mean going forward for the program and for the rest of the season? This is the Deseret News Rise and Shout podcast, BYU Beat Wisconsin. You can find this and other great shows at deseretnews.com/podcast, BYU Beat Wisconsin. And you can follow us on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout. And you can listen to Matt and I talk about BYU beating Wisconsin right now. So Matt, why do I start it that way? Why do I say so Matt at the beginning? Everybody knows you're Matt.
It's very weird.
Did you really think so? Or are you just saying that now?
I'm really just saying it now. I've never really thought about it. But I do love to take the opportunity to say that you're doing something weird. That's probably making people uncomfortable.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that. That's very brotherly of you. When the Wisconsin game was at halftime and we did our halftime show for the Wisconsin game, we both predicted that BYU would hang in there but lose, right?
Yes.
And I think, based on the comments we were getting during the show, that I think most of the people participating in that halftime show at facebook.com/riseandshout were agreeing with us, right?
Yeah, everybody was kind of on the same page.
And yet we were all wrong, Matt. We were all wrong. So far you have not predicted a game correct this year, nor
have I. I think it's fantastic. I'm very proud of that, actually.
Yeah. We are 0-3. We both predicted losses against Arizona, both predicted wins against Cal, and both predicted losses against Wisconsin. So
I thought we were going to be 1-2 right now.
I mean, that was...
I thought that was like the high side.
That was best case, right? Best case was 1-2. You just didn't want to start 0-3, right?
Right.
You wanted to pick up a win in one of these three games, likely, we thought, against Cal. likely against Cal. And yeah, 2-1 would be great. But of course, those two wins were going to be against the two Pac-12 foes and then get drummed by Wisconsin. But that still would have been... a good scenario, right? We would have taken that.
Yeah, if you would have said that to me in August,
sign me up.
I'd have jumped all over it.
Sign me up. Well, anyway, Matt, we're going to talk a ton about that Wisconsin game, of course, because we're still... Are you still excited? I mean, you're excited.
I'm telling everybody I run into about it.
So
even people who aren't college football fans.
So what's really funny is in Minnesota, Wisconsin's kind of their rival. I got text messages from a bunch of Gopher fans, like fist bump emoji and stuff, saying good job beating the Badgers. So we weren't the only people excited about us beating Wisconsin.
The only miss for me, the only miss was I watched the game at a friend's house and he happens to have a Badger pelt.
Like an actual Badger, not like a Badger that used to be alive.
Pelt. Yes.
Okay.
And we joked about, we're like, oh, we need to take your picture and you could put this on Twitter and talk about it on the podcast. And we never took the picture.
Mm. That's unfortunate.
Yeah, we were all just so stunned at the end of the game that we totally forgot about it. But it would have been brilliant.
That would have been almost as good as when I got a picture with a bear cat at the zoo.
Yes. A binturong.
A binturong. It's like when a bear and a cat mate, right? When they mate it. What? It's been so long since we made that joke. Been too long. All right. Anyway, Matt, let's go ahead. Before we get into that game, let's go to the CougarFan.com Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. Matt, BYU women's volleyball is still ranked number one in all of the land.
Because they're the best. Because they're the best team out there. I'm saying it right now.
Yeah, they are. They beat ranked number 24 Utah and then drummed Weber State. Senior setter Lindy Haddock-Epic has been named the West Coast Conference Player of the Week. That was announced yesterday. We're recording this on Tuesday night. And up next, they will likely mop the floor with Pacific and St. Mary's this week in Provo. If you're local, they set a attendance record, Matt, this past weekend.
Yep.
This past week. in the Utah game, right? Or was it the Weber State game?
I think it was the Utah game.
Utah game, because Weber State, I think, was up in Ogden. So, anyway, congratulations. Two more victories to the women's volleyball team, and I think they're going to keep rolling. This could be banner time. They've got the team, Matt, to compete for a national title this year. So that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And I'll say this again. We've talked about this before, but what's pretty cool in the television era we're in now is you can participate. Like, you can follow this team in a real meaningful way now from anywhere on the planet.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like,
so when this team's good, you can buy in, and we should all buy in, because it's fun. When these teams are good, it's fun.
Well, I mean, for our halftime show, we had somebody from the Philippines.
Yeah.
I mean, this is global awesomeness, man. When we graduated from BYU, you couldn't follow the volleyball teams except by, you know, BYUCougars.com and some newspaper articles, but you couldn't see them, right?
No, but you could rely on the World Wide Web to provide you with updates.
Yeah, but this is even better, even better. Well, Matt, let's go to the Cougars.
Watch this stuff on your phone from wherever you are.
Wherever you are. My wife doesn't even watch television on television anymore. She's always on her phone, even though it's in the house and she could come down to the basement and watch it on the big screen. She will sit and watch it wherever she is. It's amazing. We live in an amazing world. What can I say?
It is. It's an amazing time. It's the Jetsons.
It's like the Jetsons and BYU beat Wisconsin. Ha! What? It's even better than the Jetsons. Matt, let's talk about Cougars in the pros with the first pick in the NFL draft.
Sit down, Goodell.
That was a little longer than usual. the New York Jets select their next quarterback post Sam Darnold. Do you love how Sam Darnold, like, after 1 week, everyone's like, the Jets are geniuses. Sam Darnold's the next great thing. And then he lays an egg.
Hey, guess what, guys? They're still the Jets.
They're still the Jets. They're still the Jets. So first up, Taysom Hill has a 47-yard kickoff return in which the kicker was lucky that Taysom got tripped.
Yep.
You've seen this. I'm sure all of us have seen and watched it multiple times. The kicker looks like he's right about ready to pee his pants.
I think he might have. It's hard to tell in those pants.
Because a lot of times kick returners are fast but not big. Taysom is both.
Yeah, and he's coming at you like at full speed of fury right there.
Oh, he was
full head of
steam. Look at it. Like, I get it. The holes were there. He had to make one kind of minor cut, right? But quite frankly, that's how kickoffs are supposed to work. If they're blocked properly, you get a big lane, right?
Yeah, the problem is holding the lane open. But if you're running that fast,
it's not as hard. It's not as hard. How many quarterbacks in the NFL have returned kicks, Matt?
I actually don't know the answer.
I don't know that either, but I think it's one. I think it's one. I think he's the only one. Ever. I think based on those results, he's going to get more chances.
They love him in New Orleans. The fans love him. The coaching staff loves him. They're going to keep figuring out ways to get him on the field.
Fred Warner was big again. Double-digit tackles. He's now third in the league in tackles after 2 weeks. And I think is a early candidate for Defensive Rookie of the Year. Long ways to go, but
it's crazy, right? I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, really good start for him. Kyle Van Noy had an interception, and quite frankly, not a great game for the Patriots defense, or the offense for that matter. Not a great game for the Patriots, but Kyle Van Noy looked good in the loss.
Yep. It was painful to watch. I watched part of it from an airport. It wasn't fun.
It's not a good game. Earlier in the week, Kyle Van Noy had been called out by some local radio idiots, who I am not, you know, as most of you listeners know, Matt and I grew up in Massachusetts. One of the guys is Tony Maserati. He wasn't actually the one that called Van Noy out, but their show is just terrible.
It's what's like, that other guy's name even?
I can never even remember. I mean, they're shock jocks at the worst. They just say crazy stuff, and everybody hates them, but everybody listens because they say crazy stuff. Like Maz, his takes on the Red Sox are always the worst. And basically this guy called out Van Noy and said he was kind of an idiot and a jerk.
Well, he said he looks like a guy who's a jerk. It's like, I don't really know anything about him, but when I look at him, he looks like a guy who's a jerk.
Which, what does that mean?
I don't. That's
is that one racist? Of the strangest.
I think you just don't. I don't know what it is. Like what?
What is it? Like you look at the guy and he seems like a tool. Like what does that mean? How can that's your basis of analysis? But I guess on Shock Jock Radio, that is your basis of analysis.
And they got to fill 4 hours of drive time. They got to talk about something, right?
Yeah, and Vinoy responded in a very classy way, said he should come and meet him, and he also invited him to come to one of their charity functions that he and his wife run.
Well, he kind of invited the guy to say that to his face.
He did, but in a classy way, I feel like
that was a little heavy-handed.
I don't.
But the invitation to come out to a charity event.
If you're gonna call out a guy's character, I think it is okay if they respond with, "Come say that to my face."
Well, but you know what would have been? Yeah, you know, I would have loved. It's fine. I don't really have an issue with what Kyle Van Noy did. But you know, what I would have loved is if when they asked him that question, if he would have looked at the reporter and said, "Who?"
That would have been. I'm sorry. I don't even know what you're talking about.
I don't even know who these people are. What are you talking about?
Anyway, Matt, before we get to football, my first book, Pete Cross, is still on sale for 99 cents. Go to your favorite ebook retailer. You can pick it up for 99 cents for probably another week or so, and then it's going to go back to full price. So don't miss this once in a lifetime opportunity. Well, that's not true. It's probably not once in a lifetime, but maybe once in a blue moon.
I almost said that. What a weird expression.
I don't know what that means. Anyway, so Matt, Wisconsin.
I think it's a blue moon is when you have two full moons in the same month.
Oh, is that true?
And it happens with some level of frequency that is rare, but I don't remember how rare.
Look at you pulling out factoids that may or may not be true.
What I do, just make stuff up.
Make it up. So Wisconsin game, let's talk about, we've got our first tweet bag question.
Tweet bag.
This is from Todd on Twitter. That's Todd and D. Did you just pull a me? Did you just crack open a soda?
I did.
That's my gig. Stay off my gig.
I've been excited about doing this since we first started talking.
Stay off my gig.
We talk a lot before we start recording, and I'm sitting here staring at the can, and I'm like, it's not getting any colder.
That's true.
We need to get this show started so I can crack this bad Larry open.
Well, see, I have a secret stash of soda now. My wife has stopped drinking soda. For the month. They've gone off soda for the month. It was like some pact they made, okay, for the month of September.
Sounds like a secret combination.
It actually was supposed to be for like the rest of the calendar year, but my nine-year-old came back and said, how about we just do it for a month? But anyway, I have my secret stash of Dr. Pepper, but our basement is freezing. And I keep it right by the vent, and it's basically refrigerated down here. It's fantastic.
That's excellent.
It's very cold. But anyway, nobody cares about this. Why am I even talking about this? So Todd says this. He's proud to report, because last week he told us that the contrary might happen, that no one in his family wore Wisconsin red, and we cheered our guts out. When did you start believing BYU could actually win? For me, it was looking down on the field during jump around and seeing the BYU players having the time of their lives. Hashtag tweetbag, hashtag jump on in. That may be a new thing, Todd. New hashtag jump on in.
Jump on in. There's plenty of room.
I'll give you a chance to answer that first. When did you start believing in the Cougars on Saturday?
When the kick went wide.
That's me too!
Oh, I was really trying to temper my expectations. I'm sitting there. I'm sitting with a whole bunch of friends. I've got my son there, and he's like, Dad, I think they're going to do this. I'm like, I don't know, dude. I've been burned before. I don't know. It's a tall order. It'd be great. This would be awesome if they do this, but this is tough. And I had actually mentally, I'd got myself to the point where it's like, you know what? I'm going to be disappointed if we lose this year and we get into the fourth quarter there. I'm going to be disappointed if this kick goes through. But man, these guys played a heck of a game, right? I mean, it's like, I was not fully, I guess I wasn't fully convinced obviously until the kick went wide, but when did I start believing they could actually win? I don't know. Maybe sometime shortly before that.
The interception, maybe, the interception was a big moment.
That was a big deal.
That was a big moment. I was in your camp until that kick went wide. I was kind of thinking, okay, they're going to kick a field goal. It's going to go to overtime. I just don't know at this point in the red zone if we'll have enough juice to outscore them in overtime or not, right? And so I was kind of thinking, you know, we really need this kick to go wide, but he's a good kicker, but it's a 45-yarder, you know, so I don't know. I didn't really jump out of my seat and get super excited because I was trying to temper my expectations till the kick went wide. Then I went nuts, and my daughter and my wife were just, like, staring at me. But I'm not embarrassed by my actions.
So it was really funny. So we're at this guy's house watching the game, and his wife had kind of been coming in and out of the game, and we'd come to the conclusion, because we're all superstitious, and apparently she's in this superstitious category as well. It's like, you know, superstitious fans, which I know you hate. But
I don't hate. You're just – all your superstitions are dumb. I don't hate them.
But, like, when they go to their kids – when their son is a senior here at the local high school.
Okay.
And when they go to his games, like, she wears the same clothes, right? She, like, the same shirt and all this to every game. And so – but when she would come in the room, the team would start to struggle. And then she would leave, and we would start to look better. And so we had come to this conclusion that her being in the room was bad luck.
Clearly. It wasn't the players playing. It was her coming in and out of a room.
We're in her house.
2,000 miles away.
We're in her house. And so when they go, they're down, they line up to for the kick. Wisconsin lines up for the kick. And she says, well, I'm going to go into the other room for the kick. And Kalani calls the timeout. And then Kalani calls the second timeout. And just as they're lining up that third time, she says, can I come back in now? Is it safe? The entire room turns and screams. I mean, everybody in the room puts their hands up. No! Like, anyway, I still credit the fact that she has stayed strong and has stayed out of the room. That's why the kick went wide.
So, Matt, is the earth flat? Do you think the earth is flat? I'm just curious.
What? What in the world? What does that have to do with this?
What does her coming in and out of the room have to do with this?
I don't know, but it worked.
No, it didn't. No, it didn't. Do you know about the scientific method? Oh, never mind. All right. We'll move on. So, Matt, how did they do it? Right? How does this happen? Wisconsin is not a terrible team, right? Can we all agree on this? I know Brian Taylor tried to get us into some bet, which I'm not sure was a bet. I think he's just going to give us money if Cal wins 8 games.
Which honestly, I don't even understand. I never thought that. I don't know that I ever said Cal would win 8 games.
Neither of us ever said that we thought Cal was a great team. I think it comes down
to the definition of great. I think his definition of a good team is different than with him.
I think they're, at least right now, they look like they're a top 60 or top 50 team, which is all we were saying. Is that they were better than we thought they were going to be, which is not us necessarily. The computers agree, pundits agree, the Cal is a better team, robots,
Skynet.
All the robots, Skynet, Arnold Schwarzenegger. They're better, and Arizona is worse than, I mean, basically those two teams have swapped what we thought they were going to be. I don't know that Cal wins 8 games, right? But I bet you Wisconsin wins their division. In the Big Ten, are you going to be shocked if that happens?
No, but I think there's two pieces of that, right? Like their division in the Big Ten isn't the strongest division in college football.
No, that is definitely true.
Okay, but at the same time, I mean, Wisconsin is a decent team. Like, they're a good team.
I mean, the defense is clearly not what it was a year ago. They lost a lot of people, but they're highly recruited athletes on the defensive side. And it was a defense that was top 10 last year, that's not top 10 this year probably, based on what we've seen, and an offense that is the same offense that absolutely steamrolled us last year.
Yes.
Destroyed us. And quite frankly, besides subtracting Fred Warner, it's the same defense, right? The BYU has from personnel, not exactly. I mean, I'm oversimplifying here, but I mean, there was no reason to believe coming into this game that we would be able to hold them to the offensive output that they had. And there was no reason to believe that we could score enough points to beat them, right? That's why almost nobody predicted it.
And I think that's the big barometer right there, is you look at the way this game turned out last year, and you think about personnel changes on both teams, and I know they had a lot of turnover.
Sure, on defense. Not on offense, so much.
But does that turnover create what we saw on Saturday? Certainly not by itself, not in isolation, right? So, but that really is the measuring stick. Like, who are we now versus who were we a year ago, especially in light of the fact that they didn't turn over a lot of people on offense. And like you said, to start this conversation out, this team's going to compete for a Big Ten title. And if they, depending on what happens with them down the road, competing for a Big Ten title, theoretically, they could be just on the outside of playoff discussions.
Even with this loss. Though I think this loss
the Big Ten has got to hope. The Big Ten has got to hope that they don't win the conference, because this loss might keep them out.
Well, and then here's the thing. We've talked about this in the preseason with Wisconsin, and their schedule is not in their favor, right? They have to travel to Penn State, right?
And to
Ann Arbor. Those are two tough places to win against two quality opponents. And, you know, so they already had a high hurdle to get into the college football playoff, losing to us at home. And we may end up being a ranked team this year throughout the year, right? So it won't look as bad over time, maybe, if we roll into some wins. But regardless, anyway, this is not a Wisconsin podcast. So Matt, let's talk about something that I think is how they did it. Is during this offseason, not only did Ty Detmer get fired and Jeff Grimes get hired, right, and change the offense and how it's structured, but overall, we heard a lot of comments from Satake about changing the identity of the program, right, and focusing on what a lot of outsiders had said in previous. He had criticized Bronco a little bit at the end of his tenure with BYU should be focusing on recruiting big linemen on both sides of the ball, tight ends. And that's where you can win BYU on the recruitment trail. And we've gotten away from that, right? We wanted thinner, faster linemen with an eye at the end. And I think at the beginning of the tenure of Satake as well. Have we found an identity now? Are we a big, bruising, physical team now? I mean, I feel like this is a turning point in the identity of Satake's regime.
Oh, I think it absolutely is. But the thing we all need to bear in mind is let's not swing this pendulum all back the other way. I don't know that this is a finished product yet. They circled this game on the calendar, and Satake is using Wisconsin as a measuring stick for the progress of his program. So I think that there was – I don't want to say they've put more effort into this game than maybe some of the other games, but they've clearly thought about how do we measure up against this specific program in the way that they conducted themselves over the offseason and the way they put together all of their schemes and the offensive and the defense and everything that they were doing in order to put them in a position to win this game. So I don't – like let's not – I don't know that this means – this Wisconsin win doesn't necessarily mean we're going to now run the table, right?
It does. Undefeated. College football playoff. Here we go.
But I think it does tell us something about what the direction that Satake is trying to take this program in, which last year felt like a complete mystery. It felt like everybody was lost, right? What are we really trying to accomplish? What kind of a team are we? What are we doing? And you clearly see that now, at least on offense. Defensively, it's starting to come together as well. I just don't know that I like it as much.
All right, let's play a game of true or false. Are you ready? Impromptu. Yes. Not true. On the agenda.
Am I ready? True.
Is this impromptu?
True.
All right, that's
you didn't
a question.
Tell me you were going to play this game, and it also was not in the agenda.
All right, here we go. Sione Takitaki played himself into an NFL draft pick on Saturday.
True.
Absolutely. That is his game film. For the NFL draft, just when he's talking to teams, just check out the game film on Wisconsin. Corbin Kafusi is now a force on defense.
False. I'm going to hold on that one.
It's true. It's true. You're just wrong on that one. He looked great. And he looked great against Arizona, too. So I'm going to have to, at this point, say he's turned the corner. And I was, as you recall, a big Corbin Kaufusi skeptic last year. So
I'm going to hold down the skeptic camp for at least another couple of weeks.
Adam Pulsifer is no Butch Powell, but he did an excellent job on Saturday.
He was serviceable, true.
Yeah, he did a good job. When I saw that Powell wasn't playing, I was like, I really thought, okay, well, Taylor's going to run for 250 yards.
Yeah, right? We're pretty much hosed.
We're hosed. And Pulsifer, I thought, did a very good job. BYU does not need Tanner Mangum to even be an average quarterback to get to 8 wins.
True.
I believe that's also true. We have found a playmaker in HIFO as on offense outside of, say, Squally Canada.
True.
For sure. I think that's now true. Dylan Colley is a bust.
False. I'm going to say it's too early for that.
Way too early.
He had one great catch and then a drop that everybody's still kind of upset about. It's too early for that.
It's too early and we don't throw the ball enough, right? Like,
we're not throwing it to him enough.
Yeah, for sure. And we're rotating a lot at wide receiver too. All right. So significance of the win, our brother Don on Facebook, and you can, of course, interact with us on Facebook at facebook.com/riseandshout. Oh, by the way, we've got email questions. I didn't even bring those in. I'm going to have to go get those.
Goodness gracious. We got questions coming in from everywhere.
Yeah, they're everywhere. They're everywhere. And we may even have more tweetback questions. If we don't get to your tweetback question today, I apologize. We have a lot. So we may miss some today, depending on time. Don, our brother, says, What are you biggest wins? His grammar on social media is not the best.
It's the little screen, the little keyboard. He can't see so well in his advanced age.
That is correct. What are your biggest wins in BYU history? He says, in this order, 1990 Miami, 1984 Michigan, 1980 SMU, 1984 Pitt, 2009 Oklahoma, and then 2018. The problem, Don, with your question is, what do you mean by biggest? Right? Do you mean like from a program health standpoint and national notoriety? Because I think you've got them in the wrong order. If that's what you're saying,
I think you might even be missing a game
or two. Are you talking about unlikely? Like we went above and beyond? Because if that's the case, this win is easily at the top. Right? This was the most unlikely win that BYU has maybe ever had. Off a 4-9 season, Wisconsin coming off an impressive Orange Bowl and a great year last year. I mean, yeah, the Miami game is bigger in a lot of ways. Miami was number one. They were coming off a national championship, all that stuff. But we were a good team the year before, right, when we beat Miami. It was a shocker. But like this one, we shouldn't – I mean – They were favored by more than 3 touchdowns, right? That's crazy.
I don't know, like coming into the Miami game or going into the Wisconsin game, right? If you'd grabbed a random fan and taken their temperature and said, maybe not a random fan, but say a semi-educated fan, and you take their temperature and you ask, maybe that fan is Don. If I could go to 1990 Don, right? He's got, you know, not quite a full head of hair, but more than he has now. And
feathered. Anyway. He's feathered. The hair is feathered, most likely.
But seriously, I go to 1990 Don the week before the Miami game, and I say, Don, what are the odds that BYU upsets Miami? And then I go to Don a week ago, and I say, Don, what are the odds that BYU upsets Wisconsin? I'm guessing that in Miami, he would have given the Cougars a better chance. In 1990, he would have given the Cougars a better chance against Miami than he would have given against Wisconsin last
week. And not a good chance. That's my guess. Not a good chance, though, right?
Both bad chances, but I think I think the fans typically would have had more confidence in that 1990 team.
Well, Detmer was coming off a very good sophomore season, right? Detmer, we had a quarterback, right? And we weren't that far removed. We'd had some mediocre years post Robbie Bosco, but we weren't that far removed from that run in the early 80s to mid 80s that was the best run in school history, right?
Right. Sorry, I'll let you finish.
No, that's all I was going to say.
I didn't mean to Kanye West you there, but can you really take away, can you really say that any win was bigger than beating the number one team in the country?
Oh, no. Right? That's the biggest win in school history.
That right there, and that's really what makes it, right? I mean, that was huge.
Yeah, and he's got an, if this is his order, if this was an order, to be fair, Don may have just been listing them. You got to put Pitt in front of Michigan because that Pitt game made the national championship possible. Pitt was fourth. People thought they could win a national championship. Now, in retrospect,
it was nationally televised, which was a big deal in 1984.
Now, it turns out Pitt wasn't actually very good. And that's one of the things, right? One of the things, if we say most impressive win, it's hard to know with Wisconsin yet because we don't know how good they are. Like, if they end up not winning their division and they only win seven games this year, then in retrospect, like the Pitt game, it's not as impressive, like, from a football standpoint, not like a significance to the program. The Oklahoma one, I know people want to put this up. I mean, we were a really good team that year, and I thought we could beat Oklahoma that year.
Like, weren't we ranked going into that game?
We were ranked.
We're top 20 somewhere, right? Like 18th or something?
Yeah. I mean, I thought going into that game we were going to win.
So did Max Hall.
Well, clearly. But I thought we would beat Oklahoma, and they were a very good team that year. I did not think we would beat Miami in 1990, right? I did not think we would beat Wisconsin this year. And 1980 and SMU, I don't know what four-year-old Adam thought of that.
But I would imagine that most of the college football fandom did not expect us to beat the best team, the best college football team that money could buy in 1980.
Oh, no. 1990, you mean.
I mean, those guys, 80, I mean, that was like, those guys were just a perennial powerhouse at the time.
SMU, that's funny. Craig James. Whatever happened to Craig James? Anyway, yes, I agree with you. All these wins are great. I mean, let's talk about some of the stats that came out of this. BYU has defeated Power 5 teams in 12 of the last 13 seasons and has 25 wins over Power 5 teams since 2003, which is the most by a non-Power 5 school, not and Boise State.
It might even be better than some Power 5 schools.
Well, it is, actually. You can go find. There's a couple. Kansas, I think we have more wins than them over Power 5 schools. There's a couple others that we have more wins than. And in Navy's right behind us, I think they have 24 wins over Power 5 schools. Now, it's a little unfair. Boise State has to play a terrible Mountain West conference schedule, so they can't do as many Power 5 games as we can, and Independence has helped us there. But remember, Independence is non-sustainable, a lot of fans think.
Yeah,
so,
whatever that means.
I don't know what that means. So it's our first top 10 win. These are all facts from BYUCougars.com. Since road win, since we beat Pitt in 84. First top 10 true road win, because that Oklahoma game was where, in Dallas, right?
Yeah, it was in Dallas. It was the first game in the house that Jerry built.
Yeah, that's right. And our first top 10 win since that Oklahoma game in 2009. We've also, other top 10 wins include number 4 Air Force in 85, which, by the way, that Air Force team was amazing. I think people discount that one. That wasn't in Don's list, but that one was an amazing win. And, of course, beating number 1 Miami in 1990. And, of course, we're ranked number 25, Matt. So I ask you this. Is the ranking of 25 a big deal?
Yeah, it's a big deal.
Why is it a big deal? Who cares? Just a bunch of out of touch sports writers penciling in BYU because they liked Lavelle.
Oh, no, I think, and people will say, well, since the playoffs and all this, what does ranking, being ranked 25 really get you? What does it really matter? You know, maybe it doesn't mean anything. Maybe it doesn't get you anything if you're not in the playoff, right? But I would argue that it's a big deal to be. If you look 10 years from now, somebody's going to throw out some statistic about how many seasons in the last 20 years has BYU been ranked versus other programs. It's a way to compare how you're doing against other teams. And in an era of independence, you're looking for any metric you can get to line you up there, and especially, and we can all have, all kids can dream about what's going to happen when conferences realign in a couple of years, but staying inside the national picture sure doesn't hurt our case.
Well, you get on, you're on the top 25 list of games that the college football shows count down on. You know, they show the results from the top 25, right? I think it helps. Dick Carmen, friend of the podcast, Dick Carmen, wrote about it today in the Deseret News, talking about what it means to the program. I mean, it's not what it used to be, maybe, to be ranked again because of the playoff and all those things. But I think it's still very important. And Washington, we found out this week about the TV arrangements for Washington. Don't you think that Wisconsin win gets us potentially as one of the reasons we get bumped into primetime with Washington and Fox?
Yeah, absolutely.
It might have happened anyway, just because Washington is you know, a team that could be in the college football playoff, favored to win
but
the
Pac-12. But anytime they can put two teams up with numbers next to their name,
oh yeah,
they know that's going to draw eyeballs.
Yeah, yeah. And our win against Wisconsin, BYU's win against Wisconsin, is going to make people believe that both BYU fans certainly, but others, well, BYU might go in there and win. Right? So it's a game that, yeah, I'll flip to that channel instead of, oh gosh, BYU was terrible last year. I'll go watch something else, right? And I'm talking about fans that aren't fans of either team, right?
Fans of the two teams are going to watch the game anyway. Those aren't the eyeballs that networks are after.
No, those are not. Yeah, those guys, those like you and me, we're going to watch it. So anyway, here's a question we've had before. Matt, not directly this, but we've talked about, and it's from on Facebook, that it's from Richard Ashton. And he says, how would you break down execution responsibility for coaches versus players for college football, the NFL, college basketball, and the NBA? Here's his breakdown. And I'm just going to focus on, for today, college football and the NFL. He has players 25%, coaches 75%, and the NFL, he's got it 50-50. Matt, what do you think of Richard's breakdowns?
When we talked about this a couple weeks ago, I'm probably a little bit closer to 50-50 than a 75-25. Maybe I'm 65-35, 60-40.
For college?
Yes.
I am 25-75 or maybe even like 80-20. I'm a big believer in college football that you can, and Boise State's a great example of this, you can play outside of your weight class every year if you've got great coaching. And if you're Nick Saban, you can play, you can take your weight class and you can absolutely obliterate everyone else. Even though LSU, Clemson, Florida State, and others may be getting as many good recruits as you do. And you can build that program. In the NFL, Bill Belichick, the exception, there aren't many examples of coaches being able to sustain success after their star players retire or get injured, right? And you could make the argument that Brady is that player, right? For the Patriots on the NFL level. College, you can't do that, right? Because your players are constantly rotating. So the success, you got to give it to the coach. And look what Dabo Swinney has done at Clemson. They even before they were getting the players they're getting now, they had moved up into the conversation. I just think coaching, look what's happened to BYU. We switched Jeff Grimes. It's the same team, offense as last year, same players. So,
but if you think about this a little bit more tactically, right? How different were the coaches coaching leading into the California game than leading into the Wisconsin game? Right? It's the same scheme. It's the same offense. And had those players executed on the same level as they did against Wisconsin, we would have beat California.
We would have won the game.
We would have won the game.
And I'm not.
If that offensive line had opened up holes the way that they did against Wisconsin, you know, it had, you know, I, I, so I, to me, that's the part of it I see. I absolutely hear what you're saying, and we talked about this, and I listened to the show when we kind of argued about this a couple weeks ago. I absolutely hear what you're saying. You bring in a coach like Grimes, and it turns out it's a game changer for you. You look at what Dabo Swinney got in there and turned that program around before he was able to go get the big recruits, right? But at the same time, you look at the difference between weeks for this team, and what I see is a team that has executed on a different level on either side or both sides of the football in each of the 3 weeks.
Well, I think we're talking about different things. So you're talking about micro, I'm talking about macro, right? Like you're talking about, yes, the players have to execute on the field on any given play. And that will play out over games, that will play out over quarters, right? There's nothing a coach can do if the punter shanks the punt, right? You know, there's nothing he can do, right? There's nothing they can do if the wide receiver runs the wrong route and they were coached to run the right route, right? And then an interception is thrown because the quarterback threw it. I mean, I totally get what you're saying. And on the micro level, I agree with you. On the macro level, to me, it is way tilted in college football to the coaches. And I think over time, good coaching will overcome those other aspects of players making mistakes, and they fuel, right? The problem with what our whole discussion is, they're not separate, right? The two things we're talking about are not actually separate the way we're talking about them, right?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
They're actually connected, right? Because players executing makes the coaches look better, and you know, if a good coach should be helping the players execute better. But do I think
that Nick Saban could take, if you take this year's LSU team, which has beat, what, two top 10 opponents at this point? Of course, they've got this gauntlet coming up. They're never going to be able to sustain this. But
yeah, not unfortunately, right? For them.
But you take this LSU team right now, and let's say you handed them Nick Saban at the beginning of this season. Do I think that Nick Saban could coach this? Because this LSU team appears to be pretty talented. Do I think that Nick Saban, given an offseason leading into the season, could coach this team up and beat Alabama on the road?
Yes.
I think that he could. I think that he could. Do I think that Nick Saban could show up at North Texas, give them an offseason, and then beat Alabama on the road? No.
No, but he might be able to beat Nebraska on the road.
Yeah, but kidding. Come on.
Troy.
Come on, my son's middle school team can beat Nebraska on the road.
But, Scott Frost is wishing he had stayed. He had stayed. All right, so let's get back to our main discussion. Somebody asked, let's see if I can find this, if we're going to be doing a McNeese State, where is it? Somebody asked this, I can't remember, if we're going to do a McNeese State preview. The answer is no. I'm not previewing McNeese State. Number one, you can't find anything about them because there's not the news coverage that there is on FBS schools. The other thing, Matt, is everyone's trying to convince us this week that McNeese State is somebody to worry about because they're 3-0. They're at the level of UMass, okay? And Sagarin has them ranked that way. I'm not making that up myself. And he ranks, you know, the FCS schools with the FBS schools in that system. This is not a game to worry about, guys. Like, I know the players have to focus, and I'm not saying the players shouldn't be focused and preparing, but as fans, this is not – we're not going to lose to McNeese State, okay?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's, yeah, they're 3-0, but they beat Houston Baptist.
Yeah.
What are they? They're 4-0. They're 3-1. They're 3-1.
No, I think they're 3-0.
No, they lost to Louisiana Lafayette.
Okay, so whatever. They're not good compared to us, right? They're a good FCS program, sure. That's fine. What I'm looking for in this game, Matt, is what we saw against Portland State a year ago was, and you and I feared it after the game, if you remember that show, we were a little worried that, you know, we had steamrolled FCS opponents in the years previous, that there was something wrong with the offense last year, right? Because the offense looked pretty mediocre against an FCS team. What all I want to see is domination. just dominate. And then backups can play in whatever else, right? But Mangum had to play into what, the middle of the third quarter
last year? Yeah, a lot longer than we were, than anybody wanted him to.
You know, and Wilson should get some time. You know, should get some reps. Heck, Critchlow should get some reps in this game. So I know, like, some of the sports writers and everybody, and I've seen a few fans on Twitter being like, oh, are we worried about McNeese State? This could be a trap game. It's not a trap game, guys. Stop. It's not a trap game. It's a glorified scrimmage. That's what it is. So ease down, killers. Ease down. Any other thoughts on McNeese State? Because I'm not planning on spending any more time on McNeese State.
Just win, baby.
Just win. Anything you want to see, though, specifically on the offense or defense?
Tons of points.
So Andre Hutchins, that's at AC_Hutchins on Twitter, says, for every BYU win, you hope that the opponent ends up being a good football team, right? And wins every other game. Is Wisconsin as good as advertised? I think you and I are both saying maybe not as good as we thought they were going to be, but still very good, right? Still top 15, top 20.
And they're probably going to win their division.
Yeah. How good do you think BYU's first three opponents will finish at the end of the season, predict their end-of-year record? Well, Matt, I'm going to do one up on Andre. Let's talk about how everybody is, okay?
Oh, Arizona, boy.
And we're going to predict the rest of the season, okay? Let's predict the rest of the season, okay? But we're going to go game by game here and talk about each of them. Arizona, I don't think they're very good.
They're not very good.
So I, unfortunately, that win does not look as good in retrospect. I think Cal's a top 50 team. The computers think Cal's a top 50 team. Matt, do you think they finish top 50?
I think so. I think they've got a tough test this weekend in Oregon. Washington and Stanford will kind of be tall orders, but I think they're going to be competitive with most of the other games that they play. So yeah, they'll end up in kind of that top 50, top 60 space.
Yeah. We already talked about Wisconsin, of course, McNeese State, who cares? Washington is currently, the computers have them at 13th. The Massey ratings do. Matt, I think that's who they are. I think they will be a top 15 team at the end of the year. You?
Yep, I agree.
And who wins that game, BYU or Washington?
Washington.
You hate the Cougars again. I can't believe you. I also think Washington wins that game. Utah State is a much better team than they were last year, and the Massey ratings have them at 67. I think they're probably a top 75 team and a better team than they were last year, but I think fans are overrating them right now based on a close loss to what turns out to maybe not be that great of a Michigan State team. Win or loss that week?
What did I say last week?
Loss. I waffled on this one, but I'm going to stick with the win.
I'm going to give them I'll give them a win because it's at home.
Okay. All right. Hawaii improved, but they're going to be a top 80 team at best, guys. So let's slow that roll too. BYU wins.
Not too worried about Hawaii.
Yeah, BYU wins. Illinois, not as good as maybe we thought. Probably top, they're 88th right now in Massey. I like the Cougars at home on that one.
Yeah, I'll take the Cougars over Northern Illinois.
Now, Boise, tough loss this week. I still think they're a top 20 team, and I do not like our chances on the Smurf turf.
If that game were at home, I would feel differently about it, but on the road, I think we're going to have a hard time.
But I think we can hang with them.
I think it'll be close, but I'm going to call it a loss.
And if we keep rolling and offense looks really good, I may change my tune on that one. UMass was not good last year. They're even worse this year. Right now, Massey has them at 121st, and Sagarin has, I think, 20 FCS schools ranked above them. We win that game.
Yeah, that's not they're ought to not be a problem.
They're bad. New Mexico State, by the way, even worse. Win for the Cougars.
Yep.
Utah. Now, Utah's an interesting one. I know last week, including our brother Don, I don't know why people get – I will call Utah as I see it, right? I know they're our rival, but I'm not like they're a team this year that has a really, really good defense. If you watch that game against Washington, mm-hmm. Utah's defense is solid. Okay. Their offense is bad. Okay. So looking at that, the computers have them as like a top 30 kind of team. That's what I think they are. Matt, what do you think? Are they a top 30, top 35 team with that defense?
Maybe with that defense, but the offense has got to improve. And granted, I've not watched a full game.
I've watched two of their games so far. Not complete, but good portions of two games. And that offense is not good. But I don't – that's going to be a tough one on the road. I'm calling it as a loss today reserving to change my opinion at a later date.
Yeah, I'm still sticking with a loss there until I see a little bit more from the BYU team.
So, Matt, in the preseason, you called 6-6, and you wanted to say that in that preseason show that you really think it's 5-7. You just weren't sure who the other loss was. And mm-hmm. now you're saying 8-4. How confident do you feel in 8-4?
Well, I'm going to say the same thing I did after the Arizona win. We've won. We're a win ahead of where I thought we would be at this point in the season, and we've demonstrated improvement that I did not expect to see. So to move from six, like we won a game I wasn't expecting, and I'm going to flip on at least one other game, and I think the odds of us dropping one of these silly losses to the likes of UMass or New Mexico State are lower now that we've seen what this team is capable of doing.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's how I get from the 6 wins to 8 wins.
So let's talk about that Washington game that's coming up in a couple weeks. Robbie King on Twitter, that's at RBKing303, says, after a win against Wisconsin, how winnable do you feel the Washington game is? After seeing them play at Utah, they look beatable. Maybe not likely, but I think there's at least a 30% chance the Cougars prevail. Do I sound totally blue-goggled? That's a little high, but I think it's 15. And if you had asked me last week, I would have said, like, 2. Am I too blue goggled?
No, I mean, I would have given us a similar chance against Washington as I was willing to give us against Wisconsin a week ago.
Which was almost zero.
Which was nil. So now I'm probably somewhere around 10. I think we're capable of doing it. I think they do some things differently than teams that we faced already this year that are going to give us a little bit of trouble. That's a very tough place to play a game on the road. And until we're able to string together, two of these performances in a row, I don't know that I believe in our consistency enough to get more confident than, say, 10% or even maybe a little bit less than that about this game.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So let's talk about this Washington game in a different way here. Let's see. I'm going to skip some. So sorry, guys. We're not going to hit everybody's questions tonight. Jonathan Dutton on Facebook says, I'm starting to like it when you guys predict a loss. Keep it up. Okay. We predicted losses against Washington, Boise State, and Utah. So hopefully that turns us into a winner. So Pat has something to say to us. Pat Hammond, she says, okay, she is going to Seattle after yesterday's win. She's decided to go after we talked her out of it. She never did manage to hear you talking me back into it. We did, didn't we? But she said she didn't hear it. And she wonders if
it was probably rambling, nonsensical advice, as most of our advice is.
Yeah. She said it might have gotten cut. I haven't edited this podcast hardly at all in years. This is just like straight us talking.
Usually it's when I say a bad word that we've got to edit something.
That's true.
And we were dangerously close earlier tonight.
She says, do you have any advice for methods to cancel jinxing powers? I've got a pretty bad track record. Utah, Missouri, UCLA, we were at that Missouri game. That was crushing. Nevada, to name a few. I'm kind of surprised they even let me into LES anymore, asking for me. Matt, I don't believe
this
in jinxing.
This coming from the woman who I know has climbed onto the team bus to take pictures with players. Like, anybody at LES is going to stop. No. It could even stop Pat if they wanted to.
No, there's no way they're stopping Pat. 0% chance of
stopping.
She's
like
Pat.
The Jason Bourne of BYU fans. She will get to wherever she wants to go.
That's right. And Nicoletto on this game says, do the similarities between offensive strengths of Wisconsin and Washington, rushing, give the BYU D a shot against UW, or is Washington speed and coaching an insurmountable mismatch? I think it will be different because what Washington does defensively and their speed is different than Wisconsin's. But I think Nick's general point is good, Matt. I think teams that are run first teams, I feel like our defense is more likely to be able to stifle what they do.
I think our defense has a shot at keeping us relatively close in this game. I think really what's going to get us here is that I don't know that we're prepared to compete against this defense.
Yeah, yeah. We'll see. So still sticking to this Washington game, Justin Sweeney.
Sweeney.
At Justin D. Sweeney says, how crappy is it that I'm just a tad jealous I bought tickets to the Washington game instead of the Wisconsin game? Like what are the odds they beat two top 10 teams on the road in 3 weeks? Not good, Justin.
100%, Sweeney.
100%.
Put your blue gear on and get up there.
And then he says, have you ever thought what Grimes could have done with Taysom and Jamal in the same backfield? # tweetbag. # kind of depressed bag.
Only every day.
So you and I talked about this before Detmer's first year. I thought if you had a great offensive, creative offensive mind, and I was a good offensive coordinator, not creative though, right? Who would do some crazy packages. I thought you could have Mangum, Taysom, and Jamal line up in that backfield and confuse the heck out of people. And, you know, run a jet sweep too with that.
You'd get a timeout every time you lined up.
I feel like we missed an opportunity here. And Justin, you're right. Justin, you're absolutely right. So anyway, that's about it on that Washington game. The question we're getting here a little bit, and it's a good one, Matt, is Bushman. So Zachary Thornton asks us this about Bushman. Seems like Bushman and Micah Simon have disappeared. We also got a question on Twitter from the Evitman one on Twitter. Where's Bushman? Did he go the way of the unicorn commercial? # Bucky the play rocked. # still jumping around. # climb on in. Matt, Bushman's gone. I mean, I'm not saying he's gone for good. He is not. He's the third tight end now.
I think it's a month before we see Bushman,
before
we see him contributing in a meaningful way.
I think Holker and MLP have passed him. And quite frankly, based on what MLP can do after he catches, he's got some after-the-catch skills. And Holker is showing some really strong potential. Bushman's going to have a hard time getting a meaningful role on the team, barring injury or him re-stepping up his game. The word on the street is that they feel like he can't block well enough. And I think in a Grimes offense, if you miss blocks, as some of our offensive linemen have seen, you will not start and you will not play.
You won't see the field. I think the other thing, and this has been discussed a little bit on Cougar Board, as a friend of mine pointed out to me, but if you dig around a little bit, I think you'll hear things about Matt Bushman showing up to camp out of shape.
I haven't seen or heard a single member of the press say it, so I don't buy that crap on Cougar Board. If one of the press come out and say it that I trust, I'll buy it then. I think this is more likely just we've got two other really talented tight ends who just passed him and are better blockers, right? Bushman wasn't asked to block. He was a wide receiver last year, right? And, you know, I doubt he was asked to block much in high school, right? You know, and in Grimes' offense, it's very clear that the tight ends are block first and catch passes second, right?
Right.
Because everybody's got to block. Wide receivers have got to block. Everybody's got to block in this offense, except for Mangum. Maybe he doesn't have to block. But I'm sure that would give him some credit. So, Matt, let's go to Mangum for a second here. This is from Jeff Johnson. That's at Jeff J. BYU. Wilson hasn't played in the first three games of the season. Percent chance he uses this as a redshirt season. And because of the new rules, Jeff points out that he could still play in 4 out of 10 games. I think there's a high chance he actually red shirts this year if Mangum doesn't get hurt.
I think that could be as high as 50%. And if Mangum doesn't get hurt, actually, I'd probably give that a higher number. Because it's pretty clear what they're asking Mangum to do inside of this offense here. And as long as they can keep themselves in situations where they're competitive in games without needing him to do something beyond with this kind of basic packages for him, there's really not a reason to put Zach Wilson in there.
Unless you believe Zach Wilson can create something else beyond that. Right.
But if Zach Wilson were showing the coaching staff that he was, you know, a significant step above what Tanger Mangum sounds like a tasty beverage
you make from just some powder.
I think that's what they took into space. I don't even know what I was saying anymore.
If he were head and shoulders
above Tanner in practice and in fall camp, he'd already be playing.
Well,
he is close enough at this point. What they would get out of Zach Wilson is close enough in the minds of the coaches at this point that they're taking Tanner.
I would say that can change, though, right? I believe that can change throughout practices throughout the season. I agree with your premise 100%, but I do believe that could change in season based on two things. Number one, Tanner has not played well this year. Even in this game, he did well to not turn the ball over, which he did twice against Cal, and in retrospect, that might be the difference, right, in the Cal game, in what turned out to be a pretty close game.
The turnovers and then converting turnovers into points.
Right. And the second piece is Wilson may get better over the course of the year and grow their confidence, right? And if those two things intersect, maybe Wilson gets a chance. But I'm with you. I don't think Wilson, barring some disastrous losses here, I don't think Wilson plays meaningful minutes this year, barring some crazy losses and or injury, right? If he injures, obviously, he's the next guy up, right? But, you know, I think Mangum in this offense, if they're going to just expect him to not make a ton of mistakes, right? And I was impressed. He threw some balls away this last week that historically he has not done. Like, I was impressed a couple times. There was nothing there, and he just threw it out of bounds. And that has not been his MO in the past. Like, against Cal, it was not. He made a couple of throws he shouldn't have made, and they got picked off, and one of them didn't get picked off but should have. And it's like sometimes, you know, and I was watching some NFL this week, good quarterbacks throw the ball out of bounds all the time. They just, this play is not working. I've got pressure in my face, ball out of bounds, right? Like, you know, that is what good quarterbacks do, and I feel like Mangum may have made a step in the right direction there.
See, but the unfortunate part about this is that we're going to lose to Washington, and at the end of that game, or maybe during that game, fans are going to start calling for Zach Wilson to come in the game because he gives us, I'm using air quotes here, he gives us a better chance of winning. Zach Wilson in the game against Washington doesn't change the outcome. Right, and so to bench a player because we lose to a team that we were going to lose to anyway, just doesn't make any sense. But we can wait and have this conversation after the Washington loss when we get the tweet bag question, which says, "Is it time to bench Mangum?"
Yeah, yeah, and I'm already on record that it is. If you think they're close, but you're on record of saying no, and I'm okay with either one, to be honest, because Mangum's not great, so, and it's not playing great, so. But you can go worse, right? So you got to be careful.
Things can always get worse.
It can always get worse. So Joel Everett emailed us right after the game, and he said, "We won and had like 18 exclamation points." And it's what I'm calling our Saturday tweet bag, because we get a couple every Saturday after the games. Tim Jacobson asked us about missed storylines, so let's go backwards. And he says, it was the contribution of so many backups on defense. Me, the biggest storyline, and I don't know if it was missed, but we talk about Squally and we talk about other things. The offensive line had a terrible game against Cal and had a tremendous game against Wisconsin. I can't explain it.
It makes no sense.
They made some personnel changes, so that's part of it. But I was, and Hodge is a monster, man. You know, great upgrade for the offensive line.
But it's just crazy to me. That defensive front for Wisconsin is better than the defensive front we faced in Cal.
They're just better. It should be. I mean, the problem is it's a lot of newbies. So by the end of the year, it will be. At this very moment, it should be. I believe it is. I think that Cal defensive front and linebacker group is probably better than we thought before we faced them. But yeah, I agree with you. I think the Wisconsin defense is better, and I think we're going to face a better defense in Washington and probably a better defense in Utah than the Cal defense, right?
Yes.
You know, so I, you know, that offensive line is going to have to be able to replicate that performance again for us to win some of these other big games. And if they do, I really feel like BYU will go the way of their two interior lines. I if the two lines play well, I think we will win more games than potentially even these 8 wins that we talked about. If they don't, maybe we even lose more games than we're talking about, right? Because that Cal game, I mean, it was, like you said, there weren't those holes that Squally had those two big runs. There was no opportunity for that against Cal. That was a great point by you, by the way, earlier.
Every once in a while, you know?
Yeah. Matt, we have not done this, and we should finish with this today. College football playoff, Matt. A couple weeks ago, we didn't do it last week. 2 weeks ago, you had Alabama, Clemson, Wisconsin, and Notre Dame. I had Alabama, Clemson, Georgia, and Penn State. I am guessing you're going to want to change your list.
So I think I've got to take Wisconsin out. My list is staying the same. I'm just going to swap Wisconsin out for Ohio State.
So you're saying Notre Dame and Ohio State.
Notre Dame, Ohio State, Alabama, Clemson.
Okay, so I'm saying Alabama, Clemson, and then I am also – I'm swapping out Georgia. I'm going to go with Oklahoma. Oklahoma.
You're crazy.
I am not crazy. They have possibly the best quarterback in college football. He's amazing. Have you watched him yet?
Yeah, it's very nice.
I like Oklahoma, and and I think the problem, I don't think the Pac-12 is going to have a rep this year. I think Oklahoma's going to have a better resume than whoever wins the Pac-12. So I don't think, and you're making the same bet, right? Because you're putting Notre Dame.
I'm making the same bet. I'm just taking Notre Dame.
Yeah, I'm going to take Oklahoma. And it could be Oklahoma State, to be fair. They looked really good against Boise State.
When I look at that schedule, Oklahoma State might be the team that trips up Oklahoma's chances.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
But I'll tell you, we're gonna know on October 7th. I'll tell you, we'll know for sure whether or not Notre Dame is going. Because once they clear, you know, when they clear Stanford, Virginia Tech, and Pitt, I'm not even that worried about Pitt. They clear Stanford and Virginia Tech, it's over.
What are you talking about? USC looks really solid.
Yeah, I'm not worried about it.
Actually, the Pac-12 looks terrible.
Yeah, that's why they're not going to send anybody.
But the Big Ten, not a good week for the Big Ten, by the way. And did you watch that Purdue game? They got hosed.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, they totally got hosed.
Yeah, Mark Piera basically saying there's no way they can overturn this call for the touchdown, and then they overturn it.
It was the dumbest thing I've ever seen.
Here's the thing. They've really got to fix this with replay. I believe they should ditch, and I'm a replay guy, right? You either ditch replay or you have to do it by the rule of that the evidence is so freaking obvious that nobody watching on TV could disagree with you. And I don't mean that literally, but I mean there should be – Mike Piera should not be saying a reffing expert should not be saying it's clearly not overturnable and then have it overturned, right? Like, it should either be how it was called on the field or something that's just super, super obvious. And I feel like there's in both the NFL and college, there's a lot of calls where you're going, well, yeah, I get it what you're saying, but I don't know that you actually had a better view than what you did on the field at that point, right? Do you agree with me or do you think I'm...
Yeah, but lying? I think part of it is also... No, I absolutely agree with you, but I think part of it is the way that the review system has evolved over time, where you have referees will make calls knowing that, well, I'm going to call it this way because we can always go to the review and overturn it. Right? It has changed the way that referees call games knowing that that option exists.
Yeah, I agree with you, but that's not the case of the Purdue call. It I don't think that's be, the case of the Purdue but call
that
at one, all.
But the Purdue call is like the Clay Matthews roughing the passer penalty. I can't wrap my head around why it happened. We don't need to get into the Clay Matthews thing. But
gosh,
I can't
that's
wrap
ridiculous.
My head around how that wasn't a touchdown. And I know people love it when we talk about Purdue, but I don't understand how that wasn't a touchdown.
Well, and you know, BYU had in the Cal game, I don't know if they showed this on TV, but there was that lack of pass interference where he basically went through the guy. Mm-hmm. I also think, you know, those type of things, you know, do you want to have more review? At this point, I don't. But a play like that seems obvious, right? Like if you watched it on replay, you'd go, well, that's pass interference, right? He went through the guy, right? You know, way before the ball got there. But the flip side of that is right now I don't feel like they're doing that great with review, so I'm not sure we want to add more.
Why would you give them more of it, right?
Yeah, right? More of it to
We don't know what it catches. I mean, it's silly.
But I do know that if Kalani Sitake doesn't get to sub when the other team subs next week, he's going to be very unhappy.
That was crazy. That was just like, what in the world?
Isn't that that's like a thing they basic. Don't even mess up in high school?
Like the referee was standing there holding the ball up so that we could make the sub, and then he just stopped.
Then he stopped. Well, not only that, if you watched, the referee on the side was telling them, was waving are the BYU players back. You don't get to sub. So that's why everybody was confused, right? You got a guy standing over the ball. You've got a ref on the sideline saying, no, no, no. You don't get to sub because I don't think he saw Wisconsin sub, right?
Because
they
Wisconsin
subbed, one
subbed
guy.
On the other side, one guy on the other side of the field, and he probably didn't see it.
But there's got to be communication.
He's a guy standing over the ball.
Yeah, that was a bizarre thing. Luckily, that didn't cost us the game there, but would have been a weird one. Matt, I wanted to end on something that I thought was awesome. Okay, how did you celebrate? We had a question for this. And it was from Jeremy Ashton, I believe. How did you celebrate this win? Describe, you were with a group of people, so maybe you weren't embarrassing, but what did you do when the field goal missed?
Oh, we all screamed, ran around, slapping each other five. Yeah. I mean, it was awesome.
I got up, and I was pumping my fists like crazy and screaming at the television. I jumped right off the couch like I was 25 again.
Yeah, I was in a room. I was in a room full of grown men. We all jumped out of our seat and screamed.
So I got a kick out of last night. I'm watching NFL Monday Countdown. Okay, and Steve Young, of course, is on the show. So they give their final analysis of the game and yada yada yada, and everybody but Tim Hasselbeck is picking Chicago to win, and he's doing the homer pick with Seattle. And then at the end of it, all of a sudden, Steve Young raises his hands in the air. Did you see this?
Mm-mm.
And he says, go BYU Cougars. And this huge smile on his face. And
that's awesome.
Again, independence isn't working, guys. It's just not working.
It's not sustainable.
You know, wouldn't you rather have been playing San Jose State this week?
Would have been awesome.
Would have been really cool. Would have been a great win. But anyway, Matt, this was an amazing week. It was so awesome. It was awesome. We've got like this podcast is like going to be an hour and 15 minutes, and I don't feel
but
bad
very
about
rarely
that at all.
Do you get to sit and watch a game and know you will be talking about this game for decades.
Yeah, it's one of the best. I mean, we debated it with Don's list. It doesn't matter the order in the end, right? This is one of the best wins in school history. You went on the road and beat Wisconsin, a highly ranked, highly thought of program. On the road, a year after you went 4-9 and looked terrible against any team that was decent.
You know, I probably put it in the top five at least, but you're right. I mean, it really doesn't matter because this is a game that will be talked about forever.
Well, it's like the Oklahoma game, right? That we just talked about.
Yep.
Everybody still talks. Yes, we were ranked and it wasn't as unlikely maybe as the outcome of this one, but you beat really,
really. It was
really,
still awesome.
You beat really, really good teams. You remember that. This is kind of what you live for, right? And unless you play in the SEC and you're playing a top five team, top 10 team every other week, you know, you don't get these opportunities even every season, right? To play a top 10, a team that's top 10 at the time. right? Last year we didn't play, we played one top 10 team. It was also Wisconsin. When we played them, right? I don't think LSU wasn't ranked top 10 when we played them, were they?
No, they were not.
So, I mean, these are special moments, and that's one of the cool things is you look at this schedule going forward. This year, Washington, Utah, a couple of other good teams that will play Boise State. And then you look at 2019 and 2020 schedule and you go, doesn't this make you feel like we can win some of those games, man? At USC, some of these games, and you go, gosh, we could win those games. And it has changed the whole way I feel about the future of this program. Probably too much, but that's the joy of it, right?
Yeah, this has been a pendulum swing the last 3 weeks.
Yes, certainly has. Certainly has. But
You'd
two
think
and
we would have
one.
learned our lesson after the Arizona win,
Hey,
but we didn't.
2-1 is better than we thought, right? The chances of us going bowling are not 100% because you still got to win the games, but are way higher than both of us thought at the beginning of the year because you already got 2 wins in the bag.
And one of those wins, it was a win that nobody thought was you were going to get.
Nobody. Nobody. I
So
mean,
even if I was predicting, even if I stick to my 5-win prediction, right? This win should at least tell you that the team gets six.
yeah, well, Squally's mom thought we were going to win.
Yeah, that was awesome, by the
Oh
way. I
my
love that
gosh.
woman.
Fantastic. Fantastic. She did. It was just amazing. Squally had a great day. And I don't know if he was cramping or if he had something else going on because he limped off a couple times. And Talkie Talkie playing through massive cramps. I love this team, man. I loved them against Arizona. I even loved them in the loss against Cal. I like the way they're playing, and I like the heart all these guys are showing. So anyway, I guess we could go on forever. We probably shouldn't, though.
Hopefully this continues and this turns out to be a real fun team to watch, but it sure has been fun the last three games.
Yeah, it sure has. All right. Well, Matt, anything else you'd like to say before we sign off?
No, I think that's it.
All right. Well, if you haven't done so already, you should follow us on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout. You can check out this show and other great podcasts at DeseretNews.com/podcast. And let's see if there's anything else I need to say. I don't think so. So we'll catch you next time.
Go Cougars!